How's ministry going in your ward? Good or bad, I think we can help you improve it. If you text the word LEAD to 474747, you'll receive a link to our free PDF called 5 Steps in Getting Your Ward Ministering. Again, text the word LEAD to 474747 to get the free PDF or visit leadingsaints.org/PDF.
My name is Pamela Robbins and I am from Upland, California. I've learned so much from Kurt Frankum and the Leading Saints podcast over the last 2 years. When you receive a leadership calling, you really don't get much training on how to lead those within your stewardship. That's why I feel Leading Saints is invaluable. I've learned many important things from those being interviewed, and I don't know where else I would have learned this information. Kurt's book, A Culture of Ministering, immediately helped me when I was called as a new Relief Society president right after a ward boundary change and at the onset of the focus on ministering. I was overwhelmed in the beginning as I had been young women's president, but since I had listened to many interviews with Relief Society presidents, I felt confident I could learn my calling quickly and received many great ideas from the podcast interviews. Some of my favorite interviews were with Becky and Bennett Borden and others discussing same-sex attraction. Those were very eye-opening and changed my opinion on the subject for the better. I learned a great deal of useful information on this topic and was able to comfortably answer a question about it that was brought up at girls' camp when I was in Young Women. I love sharing good ideas I've heard on the podcast with my friends and family. I especially love the interview with Deanna Murphy and learned much about ministering from her. I've learned the importance of the quarterly ministering interview for the sisters in my ward, and that not only am I gathering information regarding who they minister to, but I see the importance of spending a few minutes ministering to them. I can't thank Kurt enough for his work on the podcast, and I'd like to thank his wife for supporting him. I will continue to strive to be a leader, not a calling.
Hey, hey, welcome back to the Leading Saints podcast. My name is Kurt Frankum, and I will be your host, as always. Now, if you're new to Leading Saints, this is a podcast that we produce through the powers of a nonprofit that we've created by the same name, Leading Saints, where we talk all things leadership in the context of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, everything from how to run a meeting, how to public speak, how to deal with difficult issues and questions, how to mentor someone through addiction, and on. There's only 300 or so episodes to catch up on, so jump in. It's a lot of fun. Now, as you know, in the Leading Saints community, we never shy away from heavy topics because, as the way I see it, leaders, especially bishops and Relief Society presidents, stake presidents, they don't have the choice to shy away from heavy topics because that appointment gets set. The person walks in and they find themselves in the midst of a very difficult conversation. And so I want to help all of them be better prepared to take on those conversations and approach them with empathy, love, understanding, and the ability to hit a home run. So that individual walks out of that office and thinks, wow, my bishop really loves me. And so one of those heavy topics that we have done several episodes on, which I encourage you to explore and find and listen to or re-listen to, are topics around LGBT members of the church who I've learned so much through this journey of Leading Saints, especially around this topic of LGBT members of the church. And one big organization I have to thank for that is North Star, who has helped so much in making some of those connections, bringing voices to the podcast, and just being an overall support. I actually have the opportunity to sit on the board of North Star as they are a nonprofit as well. And it's been such an honor to do that. And I can't emphasize enough. Okay, listen to me. Take a deep breath and listen to what I'm saying, especially you leaders in a travel distance to Salt Lake City. North Star is having their yearly conference on March 15th and 16th. Now, March 16th, which is a Saturday, is the day that you need to pay attention to. Clear your calendars because they have a handful of free sessions for leaders or any member of the ward council who would like to come and learn more about LGBT Latter-day Saints and how to best minister to them, fellowship them, help them feel loved and comforted in the context of a ward, or a youth program. And these are fantastic. I have the opportunity to facilitate one of those sessions. So if you do come, I'd love to shake your hand, meet you, and thank you for listening. But again, this is one of those things where we're so busy as leaders. There's so much coming at us. And gee, you know, I'd love to be there, but I just don't have the time. I mean, it's Saturday. That's really my day of rest and I'm home with the family. But if we really want to be prepared leaders, if we really want to have influence and impact, we have to take the steps in order to gain the knowledge and ability to take on these difficult interactions that we may run into. And there's so many individuals, especially in the LGBT Latter-day Saint community, who are desperate to have their leaders learn a little something about their experience so that they're better prepared to lead them. And so this is such a great opportunity. It's free. I will be there. There'll be opportunities to stay for the conference if you want to buy a full ticket. But again, this is free. You've got to be there. You have got to be there. I will put the links to register as a leader for free in the show notes on the website. And again, it's free. Did I mention it's free? We'd love to have you there. Again, any member of the ward council should take advantage of this. Bring your whole ward council, your state council, bring them all. This is important. All right. Now, one topic in the LGBT Latter-day Saint experience that we haven't touched on enough is the experience of youth LGBT. I guess I should say LGBT youth of the church who are, man, whereas I hear of adult LGBT members and their experience as a youth, it breaks my heart a lot of time because they felt so alone. And so I wanted to create some content around this topic. And so I was connected with Brittany Ellis, who I met through North Star. She is from Southern California and has lots of experience, not only her own personal experience being gay and obviously growing up as a gay Latter-day Saint, but also as a youth leader later on. Just really solid information. We talk about how to, when youth come out, you know, where do we go from there? How can we help them and support them and not let them feel excluded or different than anybody else? How do we encourage them? What about youth activities? You know, sleeping arrangement at girls' camp or a youth conference or whatever it is. You know, what if there's attractions within the ward? How do we handle that? What if they have a significant other in high school of the same gender? And how do we handle that if they want to bring them to a youth activity? So I pray that this episode will help many youth leaders out there wrestling with how to best approach this dynamic. And I pray for you. And I know content like this will help you, but you're doing fine and you'll be great. So here's my interview with Brittany Ellis. Today, I have the opportunity to sit down with Brittany Ellis. How are you, Brittany?
I'm good.
Awesome. Very good. Now we're in a random room in the Salt Palace because I have a booth here at the Utah Coalition Against Pornography Conference, and you were in town, and so we thought, well,
I was, yeah.
We'll make this work, and here we are. So where are you from?
I grew up in California in Riverside, but I currently live in Laverne.
Nice, and that's in LA area,
yeah,
you told me.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And put us into context. What do people need to know about you, and then we'll dive into your story here, but just generally speaking.
Generally speaking, I have been married for 10 years to a wonderful husband. I have 3 kids, 2 boys and a girl. They're 9, almost 8. He's very excited because he gets baptized. Nice. And 4, my girl's my youngest. I have an awesome dog that I just rescued a few months ago that
I feel like
has captured my heart. His name's Joey. And I don't know.
And you're a student, right?
I'm a student. I go to school to be hoping to become an American Sign Language nice. Interpreter.
And is that like at a university or is it more of a technical type of approach? Or?
Well, it's technically offered at like a community college, but it's like a certificate type program.
Nice.
But I'm doing my associates at the same time because I got married young and went straight to having kids and a family and I didn't quite get
typical
to the whole
story.
College thing.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm just glad that you're going back and making it happen.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I enjoy it a lot. It's a lot of fun.
Well, we got to figure out a way to do a sign language podcast. Is that a thing?
I mean, if it's a, I think it would just make it a video.
Right. Just a video that they could watch. And
yeah. I mean, you could like, I guess if you type it all up, they could just read it. But
yeah. Right. I guess there's other ways to communicate. But I just love podcasts so much. I'm like, you're missing out. But there's other ways to get content. So you are, the topic that we're going to discuss today is part of your background is that you're gay.
Yeah.
Nice. So where does that story begin? How young were you when you thought, all right, something's different than the other girls in my class?
Yeah. I was around 12. I didn't quite understand why everybody was into boys. And I was like, I played along, but I was like, I don't really get it.
Were you a tomboy type of thing?
I was. I mean, I wasn't like super tomboy, but I did. I enjoyed sports. I enjoyed being outdoors. I didn't really like the color pink. My sisters loved pink. I felt like they dressed up like Easter baskets. I was more into like neutral colors, and I wasn't like big on makeup or Barbies, but I didn't like feel like too different until everybody started having crushes on people. And I was like, oh, I don't get it, but okay, sure. Yeah, he's cute. Yeah. Okay. But it wasn't until like 12 or 13. And I kind of started to realize I started more connection to girls than I thought. And then I went to like a slumber party and like a friend held my hand. And that's when I first was like, oh, is this what everybody feels when a boy like holds their hand? Hmm. Like, oh, and then I was like, crap, what does that mean? And then I'd like seen stuff on like media, like TV had come up of like gay women in shows. And I was really fascinated and curious about that. Like something about it when it popped up just made me be like, why does that feel right? So I kind of was trying to explore what this meant. And around the same time, a woman in my ward.
And you grew up in a very traditional.
Yeah, very traditional. A member my whole life, baptized at 8, 6 kids, you know. A member in my ward had left her husband and said she was gay. And that happened around the same time that I was figuring out these feelings. So I really looked to that as like, okay, what's happening? What are these people saying? I need information. And gossip wasn't good. I came away as a 13-year-old thinking, oh, okay, like you can't be gay and Mormon. So I was like, I'm just going to shove those feelings away and maybe God will take it away. And I'm just going to focus on being Mormon. Like that's what I want to be. I want to be a strong member of the church. And so.
And your faith from a young age developed and had a strong testimony.
It did. Yeah. My mom had a lot of health challenges growing up and I learned from a young age to be strong and to depend on my Savior a lot. And my parents were good examples of that. And so I felt like I knew from a young age, like I want to stay in the gospel. So I buried it. And
that's the typical story, right? Well, that means I have to bury this so deep that nobody will ever find this.
Yeah. Yeah. So I buried it. And then at 15, it was just too much. I like couldn't handle it. And I hinted kind of around it towards a friend and she had me come over to her house and she just asked me, you know, do you think you're gay? And I couldn't even say the words. I just nodded my head and cried. And she's like, I think you should talk to a bishop. And I was like, okay. So
And how'd you feel about that?
Terrified. That was terrifying. But at that point, it had been a few years and I just felt horrible. I felt so heavy from this burden of the secret that I didn't know what to do. And at that point, I was desperate. I was just like, someone needs to give me an answer.
Did you consider talking to your parents about it or was that relationship not quite there?
No, I have always known my parents would love me no matter what. But I think because we had all these other health issues and stuff going on, I felt like I didn't want to burden anybody with any more things, especially if I didn't know what it meant.
So I can see as a teenager that being a big deal.
I mean,
you don't want to be one more burden on your family.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was like, I'm just going to figure this out. So I told my other close friend and she drove me to the bishop. And
these were all ward friends.
They were like my two best friends growing up. I told him, I believe in Heavenly Father. I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe in the proclamation to the family. I believe that man and woman are supposed to be together. And I was like, but I think I'm gay and I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that. Can I get rid of it? Is there a way? Is there not? What do I do? And
this is where I'm crossing my fingers. Like, what did he say?
I think you're going to be disappointed.
Okay. And bless his heart.
And this is what I've come to realize is the poor bishops back then, even still now, they don't know what to do sometimes. Yeah. I mean, and it's way more talked about now, which is amazing. But back then it wasn't. And especially with girls, I think with boys is maybe talked about a little bit more, but not with girls. And so he was quiet for quite some time. Said, well, you have a testimony. So I think you've got it figured out. And then gave me a pamphlet that didn't apply. I don't remember what it was, but I know it didn't apply.
We love our pamphlets, bishops.
And then he sent me on my way and then he never talked to me about it again. Oh. And so I just walked away feeling defeated and was like back to burying it. Yeah. So I turned 16 and did what a lot of SSA people do when they're growing up. You either date a ton or you don't date at all. And I went the approach of one of these boys is bound to make me straight. So I just dated a ton and kissed a ton of boys and was like, is it? Oh, no, that one didn't work. Next guy. Yes. Oh, no, that didn't work. Hmm. So I dated a ton and it didn't really work. And I kind of was like, all right, I'm just going to do my own thing. I'm going to be single, stay in the church. Then.
And did you get that point like after high school?
Near my senior year. Okay. And then I'd had a boyfriend for a little while that I connected really well with emotionally. And then he went on a mission, but it was more, and I always felt like he was more like my best friend. And then I got my patriarchal blessing and in and there talked about having a family. And I was real confused about that. And I was like, well,
that's not happening.
That's not happening, but okay, whatever. And then 6 months later, I met my husband.
Nice.
And
so was it that type of dynamic where you're like, you kiss him and it's like, oh yeah, this one would work? Or
no.
How would you describe that?
He danced really good and that's how I met him dancing. So He had that working in his favor. And I don't know, we just kind of connected emotionally.
And where did you meet him? What?
Well, my dad always said I wouldn't find a good Mormon boy if I went to like clubs and dancing and stuff. But there was a place called the Branding Irons, kind of like a bar dance place. And
and you met him there.
And I met him there.
Oh my goodness. That's great.
I know. I have to tweak it for my kids later. Somewhere else that we met. But so we met there. I didn't even know he was Mormon. Or I guess now I probably shouldn't keep saying Mormon. I didn't know he was a member of the church. So we danced all night. And then he asked me for a number. I said, sure. And then when we left, I kind of just thought, oh, if I date this guy, I kind of feel like I might marry him. But I don't understand that at all. So we started dating. I wasn't, and he knows this, I wasn't attracted to him at first. Hmm. And that was really hard for me. And a couple weeks into dating,
But he was like, I mean, you were attracted as far as a friendship.
Yes,
goes. Like
yes.
You're really into
yeah,
that relationship.
Yeah, like we got along.
But physically.
Physically, it wasn't there. And so I remember praying a couple weeks into our relationship and told Heavenly Father, like, you got to help me out. Like, if you want this to work, I need to be attracted to him on some level. Like, I can't go into a marriage with no attraction. And
let me stop you here. In between the time you went and saw the bishop as a teen and now, was there any communication or, I mean, because I've heard it with individuals experience same-sex attraction that it sort of comes in waves. Like sometimes it's, mm-hmm. it's just really heavy and you maybe need to talk more about
yeah.
it. Did you feel like there were moments where you did return to the bishop's office or
there were
counselor?
Moments where I wanted to, but I didn't.
Because you may get the same
yeah,
response.
I figured like, what's the point?
And bless their hearts.
Yeah, like, yeah. And I was just like, what's the point? They're just going to send me on my way with a pamphlet that doesn't apply.
Did therapy ever become an idea? Or
not really. I think because of all my other family stuff, I really did like just keep to myself. Yeah. I just thought that was best for everybody if I just sure. handle this okay. on my own.
Yeah. And I think that's just a really, I mean, that seems like, okay, that makes sense. But I think a lot of youth in this stage, that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's sort of new. It maybe doesn't feel as heavy. I don't know, but maybe yeah. they feel like, okay, I can handle this. It's not that big of a deal. I can carry this.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's okay at first,
yeah.
but I think Satan works in isolation.
Right. Yeah.
And so when you start thinking you can handle everything on your own is when he starts to work his way in there. Yeah. So
going back to here you are on the verge of marriage.
Yeah. So I kept dating him. I kind of got the answer of like, just stick it out. And as we started dating, the more I started to love him, the more the physical stuff didn't matter. And I wouldn't say he just instantly became attractive to me. It was more of that wasn't my top priority anymore. And because of loving him, I was attracted to him.
Hmm.
And he is an attractive guy. I mean, it's not like
we'll put
wasn't.
A picture up. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, he's attractive.
Good looking guy.
Any other straight woman would be lucky, but but it, you know, it just came to me differently.
Yeah.
But it to me felt real.
Yeah.
And
so did you share with him that you were gay?
I did.
During the time of dating?
We got engaged and I was like, it happened a little sooner than I thought. I would have given him the heads up beforehand, but I didn't know.
But he surprised you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I didn't know.
So you returned that surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know I was getting engaged. I'm like, oh, by the way. So I just said like, hey, I kind of have these feelings. I think I'm gay, but I don't really know what that means. And if you're cool with it and I'm cool with it, let's get married. If not, like you have an out and mm-hmm. I won't hold that against you. He's like, well, you love me, right? I'm like, yeah. He's like, cool. And then
great.
We got married. We never really talked about it though. For like 7 years, I was kind of scared of like, okay, he was cool with it then, but he realizes it's like, it didn't go away after we got married, then what? And so I kept it quiet again for a long time. And then
did it feel like it was the big elephant in the room or were you able
no,
to just move on?
I felt like for me, it was hard, but I don't think it ever crossed his mind. And so around like year 7, I finally was like, we got to start talking about this. Like, uh-huh. I need to talk about this and I need you to hear me out. And when I'm struggling, I want to be able to tell you. And he said, okay. So then we worked through it and everything and can't claim all of it. We had an awesome therapist.
Sure.
I can't be like, yeah, I figured it out on my own. Yeah. No, I had
And that's
help.
Important to mention. That.
Yeah. Yeah. We had help for sure. Yeah. And it was good. And we've been doing good since.
And now, how many kids do you have?
3.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're about halfway. That's good.
No, we're done.
I'm kidding. So anything else So how would you describe it as far as present day? Is it sort of this roller coaster up and down? You know, you go through phases where you really have to be open and talk about it. And what's that dynamic like? How would you describe it?
Yeah, it definitely comes in waves. And I think that it comes with anything. I mean, sometimes we're like really on point with reading our scriptures, and other times we're like, dang, it's been like 3 days and I haven't read. And I feel like it's kind of like that, where I go days, weeks, being like, it doesn't even cross my mind. And then I'll like see an attractive woman or something, and it kind of hits me, and I'm like, oh dang. And before, I used to shame myself. I'd be like, oh my gosh, why do you don't look at her? Oh man. And I'd like beat myself up. But now I just crack a joke in my head. Be like, you would think she's attractive. Okay, move on. And then it's fine.
And are there certain tools or tactics that your therapist has helped you work through that, or that you've developed that, I mean, is it just not allowing the shame to
take
over? I
think not allowing the shame is huge. Yeah. I think that I had a friend tell me, like, just crack a joke in your head. And that's what she did. And I was like, okay. And that helped a ton. I think that when you look at it so heavily, it becomes heavy. But if you can look at it lighter, then it's not so big, and it's not so, I don't want to say hard, but it feels easier to manage. And so crack a lot of jokes. I journal like crazy. I love art. So I do these like scripture doodles where I like draw about scriptures or conference talks. Oh, cool. And I feel like that's a really good way for me to kind of sort my feelings out on paper. But it does come in waves. And I just have to remind myself when it's harder to lean more into my Heavenly Father and to be very open with my husband. I mean, he's a great support. He's really comforting and kind.
Has he had to learn maybe his own
side
of tactics and things?
Yeah, he has his own journey for sure.
Would it be worth mentioning, or maybe that's a whole nother podcast?
No, it might be a whole nother podcast. But no, he definitely had to learn. And I give him a lot of like respect, because he did a lot of it. Once he realized it was important to me and it was important to our marriage, he did a lot of research on his own. He looked up like websites and people's stories. And I'm a part of a group called North Star. So he looked up a lot of their information and asked me a ton of questions and really tried to learn. And he's still learning and he's still trying to figure it out. But that was huge for me, just him showing an interest. And so over the last couple of years, he's gotten really good at just listening.
Yeah.
Just not trying to fix it, just listening and loving me. And that's like the best support I could ever have.
And is therapy included both of you going to therapy at the same time?
Yeah. Both of us, each of us on our own, the whole mixture.
Yeah. And I want to be clear as we hear about your experience that it's not like you found the magic bullet or your journey and tactics will work for everybody.
No.
But it's interesting just to hear, because I, you know, for myself, who I don't experience same-sex attraction, I don't know how I would reconcile or do the day-to-day in that issue. So it's helpful as a leader to hear that, to see that that someone is doing it. It's not like you're white-knuckling it every minute of the day.
No, no. Yeah. It definitely comes like up and down. But I think I look at it often as like we all have a void sometimes. So for some, it's, you know, their child died. For another, it's stuck in a wheelchair and can't walk for the rest of their life. My void isn't harder than anybody else's. It's just different.
Yeah.
It's unique to me and to, you know, whatever. So I feel like often I just have to remind myself that I'm not the only one with a hard thing. And while I might feel like it's very individual, but no one has to deal with this or whatever, I just have to stop and get perspective. And I have to remind myself, everybody has a void. And I could choose to fill that void by leaving my family and acting upon those feelings. But then I'm just going to replace it with another void, which is not having the gospel and not having the Spirit with me. And so I just pick which void I'd rather have. And I would much rather have the gospel. And with the gospel and with the atonement, I feel like that void gets full enough. And it might not be till the next life that it gets completely full, at least in my perspective, but it's full enough to where I feel like I can do it.
I think that's such a great perspective for leaders to really understand and absorb, is that, you know, is there counseling with somebody or helping someone through a hard time to recognize that, you know, we all have voids. I'm not saying my void is like your void or the tactics I use for my void will work for your void, but it's through the void that we find Christ and that we grow and develop and are healed, right? And so, because especially as a youth, you can feel like, not only am I the only one with this void, I think I'm the only one with a void. And,
I can't tell you how many SSA individuals think they were the only one for years. I did. Mm-hmm. I did not know until as an adult that I wasn't the only SSA woman married to a man staying in the church.
Yeah.
And when I realized I wasn't, I was just shocked. I was like, what? There's more people like me. Like, it was insane. So it, for youth, I think they totally feel that way, where they not only are like, oh man, I'm the only one feeling this, then they're like, no one else feels it the way I do. Oh man, I'm like so different. And they don't realize that they're not the only one.
Yeah.
There's tons of us out there.
So how did you come across North Star?
Well, there was a woman in my stake that had come out as gay at the time, and she was part of North Star and she did Voices of Hope. But I had met another friend, and that friend had mentioned it and was like, hey, yeah, there's this group called North Star, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, cool. And then shortly after, I met the woman in my stake and watched her Voices of Hope and talked with her forever. And between those two, I hit the ground running on the North Star kick.
Nice. And you've been, did you say three conferences?
This next year, I think will be three, or this coming March.
Yeah, just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, a couple of weeks. Yeah. Yeah, it's closer than I thought.
Yeah.
I loved it. I remember being terrified to go in, and I was...
Everybody has shared that with me. That,
yeah.
Like, they walk in feeling like everybody's going to be looking at me.
Yeah, I was like, I'm literally coming out to hundreds of people at once right now just by walking through one door.
It's funny because I walk around thinking like, I bet people think I'm gay.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And that's okay. You know, it's not like I walk around, I'm not. It's just funny to be in that.
I told
that
my
arena.
Husband last year when he came to the conference, I was like, people are probably going to assume you're the gay one and I'm not, but we'll correct him. He's like, okay. But no, it was great though. I realized after like 40 minutes of being there, I was like, these are my people. This is great.
Lots of hugs going around.
Yeah, everybody's just like me. Why was I terrified? So it was great.
That's cool. How would you describe to somebody that's maybe that you're just telling about North Star, whether it's a leader or somebody in the LGBT community, what sort of resource has it been for you?
It's been great. For one, like I just mentioned, realizing I wasn't alone is huge. I mean, and like I said, Satan works
in
isolation.
That's where shame lives. Yeah.
So when I thought I'm the only one doing this, I'm the only one trying, I'm the only one that's married trying to make this work, realizing I wasn't was like the best news ever. On top of it, the connections of the relationships I've made a lot of really good friends that experience the same thing that I'm so eternally grateful for, that have impacted my life and influenced me in ways that I forever have been changed by. I think the workshops at conferences that North Star provides are really great. They're insightful. They're kind. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard like a negative thing at any of, of their conferences. I felt the spirit in a bunch of different sessions. And I just walked away feeling uplifted. Like, I can do this life. Like, I got this. And I love that. And so now anytime they have anything, I mean, I live in a different state than where it's mostly out of Utah. And obviously I can't be up here all the time, but when I have stuff I can make it to, I definitely make it a point.
Is there any like smaller gatherings or things that happen in your neck of the woods?
Yeah. Or? Yeah. I'm on the executive committee of North Star, and I'm also over the events committee. And we just recently started doing quarterly get-togethers. So it means that we'll pick like a game night or local barbecue or whatever, and we find different people in different states and different cities to open up their home or to pick a location where anybody in that area can come for one night every like 3 months and get together and socialize and meet who's around you that's going through similar things. And we just had one recently, let's say maybe like a month or so ago. I don't know the exact date off the top of my head, but it was really fun. We had people from all over come hang out at my house, and it was many locations in Utah and Idaho, some on the East Coast. We have a lot of little kinks that we want to work out of.
Yeah.
I don't think we got it out there soon enough, and we kind of want to get more hosts to open up their homes to that. We can have maybe smaller groups in more places versus big groups in a few. But it was great. So there's definitely local areas.
It's not just the conference.
Yeah, it's not just the conference.
Yeah. So that's a big part of it.
Yeah. Huge. We're trying to have it expand out. The hard part is just getting people to come out so that we can all get together. I'm sure there's tons in every ward and stake that just aren't out
it's buried.
Know. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So the reason why I definitely want to interview you is I have a friend who's a staking women's president, and she had some questions, concerns as it related to LGBT youth and how to best minister to them and love them. And she talked with Bennett and Becky and North Star, and then they connected her to you. And after the phone call with you, she said, you have got to interview Brittany. This would be so helpful.
She's being too nice.
Well, we'll see about that. But And so I wanted to have a really strong discussion in the context of LGBT youth and in our wards and you know, young men, young women, and how to fellowship to them and love them and make them feel comfortable. Because I think it's easy. I think we're figuring out little by little through hopefully resources like Leading Saints and North Star, like, okay, I get it. Like, I need to be more loving. I'm not there to remind them that, oh, did you forget that you're sinning, or
that
sort of thing, right? But then it comes down to the practical things, like, okay, now we're going on girls camp, or now we're going to youth conference, or a Boy Scout camp, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So how does that dynamic work? All those things. So let's hit some of those points that you've prepared. But I guess you mentioned it starts with a poem that you wrote when you were 15?
Yeah, sometime around 15. That friend that I mentioned earlier that asked me for the first time if I was gay and then told me I should go to a bishop, I had read her this poem. And that was my cry for help without saying it.
Yeah.
And she picked up on it real quick. I only bring this up because I think that it's how most youth feel that go through this. And I'm not like a poet, so it's not going to be like the best thing you ever heard, but it's called Running. What I fear the most is admitting to my secrets. If I say them out loud, they become real. Real as the sun and moon, and real as life itself. So I run. I run as hard and as fast as I can from the idea of who and what I could be, and run to the idea of who I want to be or should be. I haven't figured it out yet. I run from feeling alone, like I'm the only one who feels out of place, like I'm the only one with secrets, secrets like mine. I push them out of my head, at least I try. But it doesn't mean I don't think about it. I feel helpless, helpless in a way that I don't know what to do. And I have no one to share the burden with. It's for me to carry alone. The secrets that will never be spoken, never to leave my lips. I refuse to make it a reality. I refuse to have it take over my life, though at times I feel it already has. But I keep refusing and I keep running. Even if I'm tired and exhausted, I keep running. And I fear I will never stop. And that is what scares me the most, not knowing how long I'll have to run.
Wow. Well, if you're not a poet, you should be one. Wow, that's powerful. So how does that, I mean, that describes where you're at as a youth. And I think many LGBT youth would be able to relate to that.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, definitely.
So I guess you mentioned this a few times in the quote, there's this feeling of, I got to bury this. Even if it comes to the surface, I can't even like articulate the words with my lips.
Yes. I felt like if I said it out loud, I don't know, lightning would strike me or something, like something bad would happen if I even just said it.
Because you're almost like admitting to it.
Yes.
And you're owning it at that point, right?
Yes. If I admit to it, then what? Do I have to run with it? Do I have to act on it? Do I have to tell people? I mean, those are all questions going through my mind of, you know, what does it mean? And if I say it out loud, then it's real and I can't deny it. I can't keep shoving it away. So I feel like the reason why everybody like makes the big deal of like coming out is because you can't put it back once you do. Mm. And your mind is a really tricky thing. And I feel like it can keep things at bay. But the moment you let it come to the surface, you can't push it back in, and then it's there and you have to deal with it. And if you're a youth that doesn't have resources and doesn't know who's safe to tell and who isn't, if you come out and you say those words out loud, you now feel accountable to figure it out. And what do you do if you don't know where to go from there?
Yeah. So should part, I guess I hesitate when I ask this, but is part of the resource and help and mentorship youth leader or a bishop could offer to youth is help them come out, like help them articulate that? Because is it freeing when it comes out, or is it just like more of a burden?
Well, there's a thing that my friend had told me it is the perfect way to explain it. It's called a vulnerability hangover. Mm. And that is what it is. It's freeing to say it out loud for the first time or every time. But then there's this massive vulnerability shock of, oh my gosh, what did I just do? What did I just say? Is this person going to tell the whole world? Do they hate me? Do they like me? And you start running with all these like freak out, oh my gosh, I was just share this personal thing. And you start to panic and you don't want to talk and you feel like you need to hide yourself. And that's the vulnerability hangover where it's just so heavy and so much. So I think that it is freeing. And I think it is not that we need to coach these kids how to come out, but help them with the vulnerability hangover after they come out.
That's so powerful. Because I can imagine maybe a setting where even with parents, maybe, you know, their daughter or son comes out and there's this beautiful moment, the spirit's there, we love you, hugs, kisses, you know, and then, well, everybody wakes up the next morning is eating Cheerios and they're thinking
awkward.
Like that's where the vulnerability
hangover, right? And that's where I think we need to give the youth most support.
Yeah.
think youth will, if they feel safe, they will come out. They will tell, and it's going to be in their own time. And if you present an environment, whether it's at church or at home, where it's talked about, then they will come out. And I'm a firm believer that we need to start talking about the hard conversations at church. Hmm. It needs to be talked about. And I know it's awkward and hard for a lot of people, but if it's not talked about, these youth aren't going to open up.
Yeah.
It needs to be a common thing that it's not taboo to talk about it. If you talk about it, all of a sudden, all your young women are going to be gay. That's not how it works.
It's not contagious.
It's not contagious. So it needs to be talked about. And if it is, we can lend a lot of support for the aftermath.
Yeah.
Because it is awkward, even as an adult. I mean, I came out to a friend of mine, and then the next day I was a jerk to her. I was mean. I was snappy because I was freaking out inside. And I was
the hangover,
like,
right? The
I was like, oh my gosh, what did I just do? And what did she think? And so it was really interesting. And she was really kind. And she was like, I think you're freaking out. I'm going to give you some space today. Let's talk again tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized I am freaking out. Like, she doesn't deserve that. And so I think we need to lend a lot of support to the aftermath.
That's so powerful. And I'm going to plug, we'll be plugging throughout this episode, that the North Star Conference, especially the leadership sessions that are free for leaders, any members of ward councils to come, young women's presidents, young men's presidents, bishops, relief snipers, free for these sessions. And you register online. But because as you say that, like, because on paper it makes sense. Yes, we need to have more of these conversations, these real conversations at church. And I don't know how to do that, but we have a whole conference, a whole resource. You can come and figure out how to have those conversations.
Yeah. Meet people, bring them back to your stake, have them to a fireside, have them talk to your youth.
And walk away feeling with being able to tell your youth, I was at this conference and let me tell you about it.
Yeah.
And that's where safety is created, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Any other thoughts with the vulnerability hangover, which I love? I think we need to print t-shirts.
Well, I can't take credit for it, but I'm going to run with it.
You're right. As far as how to, I guess my mind goes to like creating some normalcy there, that because you mentioned before we hit record that a lot of youth feel like, now that I've come out, I probably won't be able to serve a mission. Or now that I come out, I guess, you know, overnight scout trips or girls camp is not an option. So almost establishing some normalcy of make sure, you know, this doesn't change anything, right?
I think that, that leaders need to be more clear. And I think a lot of leaders don't know either. So maybe they need to come to the conference or listen to things like this podcast because even Christ was tempted. I think it's Matthew 4. Let me look real quick. Yeah. I had it written down.
Just did the come follow me lesson.
The come follow me lesson. It was recent that I think it's just like 2 weeks ago that we studied it. And it's Matthew 4:1. And it says, then was Jesus led up of the spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. And I love that because even Christ was tempted.
Yeah.
And he was this perfect being. And we are not our own temptations. You know, we have them, but it doesn't mean we're sinning. And so I think that needs to be clear to the leaders and clear to the youth that even if you feel like you're gay or bi or pansexual or transgender or whatever it is, whatever blanket you fall under, it's not a sin to have those feelings. And so girls camp, scout camp, high adventure, there's no reason why you can't go. There's no reason why you can't serve a mission. I know that I had talked to a few different people, and when I was in the stake, young women's, in my old stake for a while, and we had a young women's leader come up and say, we have a girl that's inactive. She's gay, but she wants to come to camp. What do we do? And my leader or my president and the other counselors, they knew it. They know I'm gay. They just looked at me and they're like, oh, what do we do?
This is your area.
This is your expertise. And I was like, yeah, let the girl come. Yeah. Our job as leaders is to have these youth come to an environment to feel the spirit. And we can't do that if we exclude them from those environments.
Yeah.
It is our job to let the spirit do the work. And we need to create environments that they can feel safe to come. So experience.
I want to dig into several of those types of scenarios because I think a lot of leaders are just, they have no clue what to do, right? Yeah. But I want to make sure with this, any other, as far as helping with this vulnerability hangovers, I mean, creating normalcy, encouragement, like nothing's changing, anything else that would help after?
I think youth should, you know, we're all agents unto ourselves. It talks about in the scriptures, and I love giving them that power to act themselves. So I would suggest to leaders, but also any youth that are listening or parents are listening of youth that are experiencing sex attraction, I think it's important that they take control and say, I might freak out tomorrow. I might need extra love tomorrow. I might need you to remind me 100 times in the next week that you're okay with me, and have them be open and establish that communication. But for youth that aren't doing that, that don't take that lead, we need to establish that as leaders. We need to say, you might feel really vulnerable tomorrow. And guess what? I'm still going to love you. And I'm going to text you. And I'm going to tell you I love you. And I had a friend that I came out to once, and we were both on like a vacation. I met up with her for a few days, and I came back, and there's like 2 days of no cell service. And I was freaking out for those 2 days. And I'm like, oh, she probably hates me. I don't know. She probably thinks I'm so weird. And the moment she got back into town, she dropped off like banana bread at my house. I was like, I love you. And that meant the world to me that she just did that little bit extra to say, I still love you. I'm your friend. I'm here. Need some bread.
Yeah. And I think that's how I would summarize it. It's the continual communication, which your story early on as youth where that bishop just didn't even talk about it again, right?
Yeah. If he would have just checked in, just said, how are you? Do we need to talk about it again? Like that would have meant the world to me, but he didn't. It was no communication. I don't even think he made eye contact with me after that. It probably was really awkward
and
for him.
That's not the first type of that example I've heard of leaders that just, there's, and again, no fault to them. They're petrified by these scenarios. Yeah, they don't know what to say. They don't know how to fix it. And so they just avoid it, right? And I can relate to that a lot. And really, it's not that you have to continue that contact and that connection and communication because you have to talk about it. You can just, you don't have to talk about it. You can, like, I love that. That
drop off banana bread.
Yeah, drop off banana bread. Maybe give them an opportunity. Do you want to talk about it more? Or like, or, you know, just how's life?
Yeah. And it's good, I think, for leaders also to ask, like, what do you need from me? Because I think some leaders take the approach of, oh, they came to me and now I need to do this. I need to do this. And you do this and it slow your roll. You know, like when I came out to bishops, even as adults, as an adult, I would say, like, I'm coming to you. I'm telling you I have this challenge. And what I need for you is just to know about it. Use me as a resource and, you know, love me despite it or whatever. And they're like relieved, like, okay, thanks. Now I know what you need from me and I can do that. And so I think it's important for a bishop or a young men's leader, young women's leader to tell their youth, like, thanks for telling me. What can I do? Do you want me to check in with you like every week? Should we send scriptures back and forth to each other every day? Do you want to, I don't know, like, hang out? I don't know. Do you need a hug every time you see me at church? Like, what do you need?
That's powerful.
And
because as leaders, oftentimes we feel like we need a lead out, but no, follow their lead.
Yeah.
And ask them, how do you want me to help with this situation? Like, what do you need?
Right? Yeah. And if the youth say, I don't know, be like, okay, let's figure it out together. Yeah. Let's start with checking in once a week and just saying, how are you? Are you doing okay? Did you have a hard week? Have you told your parents yet? How do you feel about that? You know, just start somewhere. So if they don't give you any lead, pick something. But most often, I think we know what we need. We just don't want to say it.
Yeah.
So if we can just ask them, what do you need? And work from there.
Yeah, that's great. All right. So let's dig into some of these scenarios here.
Okay.
They're sticky. And help me, because I don't get these questions like you do, but oftentimes it is girls' camp that obviously if we go on a youth conference, we're not putting the boys who are attracted to the girls and some of the girls' tent, right? When they're dressing and things. But even for those, you know, the straight youth, they may be concerned about that. Well, I heard she's gay and here we are like changing or.
Yeah.
So what are some of the scenarios you hear and some of the responses?
Yeah. I want to start off by saying, I don't think the youth are the one that have a problem with it.
Amen.
I think the leaders are the ones that are uncomfortable with it. Mm. I think that it is so common
to assume that the youth,
the youth are surrounded by people who are gay and bi and transgender, and we live in this wonderful age of let's just love everybody, let's just like be friends with everybody, like no hate, man, like you know they're like real lovey-dovey.
You know, that's true, because I asked my nieces and nephews who are in high school. I said, so are there like gay students that they hold hands and kiss in the hall? And like, oh yeah, absolutely. Where when I was in high school in the late 90s and it was still, that was not the culturally, you know, normal. Right.
Yeah.
But now it's happening. So it's used to that.
They're used to that. It's in almost every TV show. Yeah. I mean, I pretty much avoid media cause I don't really think it's like good for me if it's in it, but it's everywhere. I mean, I think I watched the same like 5 shows from 10 years ago because I'm like, hey, it's safe. There's nothing in there. But it's everywhere. They're not fazed by it at all. It's the leaders that have a problem with it. Yeah. So, I mean, if they're at girls' camp and they're in the same cabin and all the girls are changing, most likely that girl that's gay isn't going to look around because she doesn't want to make people feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm going to start by saying, just because you're gay doesn't mean you're attracted to every single person you see. Okay. Yeah. Like, just like if I was straight, I'm not attracted to every man I see walking down the street. It's the same for, you know, women, or if you're a gay man, you're not attracted to every man you see or whatever.
Nor does that, we can't assume that they're like a perverted. Everything that they do. Right.
Yeah. I mean,
and it's tough with teenagers because there's hormones and things happening. But
yeah, but mostly I think that most of the time they're not going to be attracted to like half their young women that they see at girls' camp or whatever. Mm-hmm. But even so, when it comes to like changing, I mean, you can make it a rule that like, okay, like everybody changes in the bathroom, you know, one person stall, everybody changes in the bathroom if you're really worried about it. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you, I don't think the youth are worried. And if they are, they'll tell a leader. And then you take action from there by making the bathroom rule or whatever. But as far as like sleeping in the same tent and all that, I mean, there's a reason why it's like 2 deep leadership. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I think it's funny. Maybe from my perspective, I'm like, I wasn't going to go crawling around in people's beds at girls' camp, you know, trying to do stuff or whatever.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's some outliers out there like, oh, I need to email my story that this happened. Right.
And
sure, that's going to happen. Even on youth conferences with boys and girls, you find the two that are making out in the woods or whatever. Yeah, right? It's like, all right.
Yeah. But I think that we just have to remember that these are like, I mean, I guess from like my perspective, like girls' camp, that we are like daughters of God. Girls are naturally more affectionate. Mm-hmm. Girls are naturally like, they change in front of each other and they're not like fazed by it. That the more emphasis you put on it, the more you try to build all these barriers, the more awkward and the more power you give it. Mm-hmm. If we can just like take a deep breath, and if something comes up and someone's unsure, feels uncomfortable, then you approach it with like a loving way of, and you don't have to tell the youth it's for that reason. You just be like, hey, leaders, we like coming out of your tent sometimes and stuff just to make sure that we're not like walking in on you changing. We're going to have a bathroom rule, change in the bathroom or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So if the leaders feel like it is a larger issue than typically normal, then they can have a general rule for everybody. This is how we do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Don't separate the girl. Don't give her own tent and say, this is where you sleep and this is where you change. And that's horrible. I mean, you don't want to isolate a person and make them feel like they're not welcome because they are. But I think that they're how you go about it. I know that I've heard of leaders that have found out a girl in their ward is, or their stake is gay, and they told all the other parents and went to the bishop and demanded this girl couldn't go to camp.
Yeah.
And then demanded if she did, she needed to be in her own tent away from the other girls. And if you ask the girls, I asked this leader that was telling me this, and I said, well, what do the girls think? And they're like, the girls didn't care. But the moms were freaking out.
Yeah, it typically comes from the parents going to the youth leader or to the bishop and saying, you've got to do something.
Yes. And nobody stopped to ask this girl, how do you feel about it? Hmm. Are you uncomfortable? You know, are you okay? Or ask the youth, like, okay, we all know this girl's gay now. How do you feel about it? Are you cool with her being in the same room as you? Are you not? Mm-hmm. They just assume that, this can't be good. And it's the same. My dad, even when I came out to him as an adult, said like, well, you think it's wise to have friends that are girls? And I was like, well, who am I supposed to be friends with? Married men? I'm married. That doesn't quite work well with other people. And it's just, you know, people think like, oh, if you have this struggle, stay away from it. Don't go near it. But that's not realistic. Yeah. And it's okay to have connection, and it's okay to,
it's crucial. To have connection.
Yes. Yeah. And it's good to love other people. We just have to learn to love within the Lord's bounds, and let's help our youth learn it.
Yeah.
Don't isolate them. Let's teach them.
The other point you said, maybe you've touched on this, but, love, but don't exclude. Right.
Yeah.
Or sometimes people say, and maybe I say that wrong. Some people will love them, but it's important that they also include them in these things, right? Anything and we've missed on that point?
You think. I don't really think that. Yeah, I don't think we've really missed much. I think that the whole point of these I mean, if you think about church and these young men and young women's programs, the whole point is to get them together.
Yeah.
To give them a place that is surrounded with good things, good people in the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if our job is to help their testimonies grow and to enrich their lives and help uplift their spirit, then why would we exclude them?
Mm-hmm.
We need to bring them. I mean, even if I know I'm trying to keep people anonymous. I had somebody talk to me that was a young women's president that said, I have a girl in my stake or my ward that's gay and she has a girlfriend. What do I do if she wants to bring her to Mutual?
Mm. I was going to go there now.
Yeah.
There's some youth that are maybe have a boyfriend or a girlfriend that and are acting out in that way.
Yeah. Right? And I said, let them come to Mutual. Mm. But you can establish that boys and girls that are, you know, straight at Mutual, they're not allowed to hold hands. They're not allowed to like be off making out and whatever.
Yeah.
So you just establish the rules. Like, we would love to have your girlfriend come to Mutual. Yeah. But, you know, be respectful. Like, don't hold hands. Don't kiss.
Yeah.
But come. Because who's to say that that girl, that friend, or, you know, the girlfriend that isn't a member, you know, who's to say we don't want her to feel the spirit?
Yeah.
Let's have her feel the spirit. I mean, there's a lot of people know of like Courtney and Rochelle. Do you know them?
Yeah, they were, one was in the church and then the other converted and they were in a,
were they married?
Up in Oregon or Washington or something.
Yeah. And
we'll link to their story. There's a video.
Yeah. It's great. And Rochelle like wasn't a member of the church. And then when Courtney decided she wanted to go back, she ended up taking missionary discussions and then they got divorced and they came back and Rochelle got baptized. And so I think that who are we to say, because they have a girlfriend that they shouldn't feel the spirit or they have a boyfriend and, you know, they can't come to the young men's activity together or whatever.
Yeah.
Just establish boundaries of let's be respectful. Let's bring them, have fun. This way they feel included. They know they're loved, but you're clear of we might not like, you know, think it's the best way or, you know, like, hey, we do have like, we believe in the church that marriage is between man and woman and that's how relationships should be. But I'm going to love you either way.
Yeah.
You want to bring your girlfriend? Fine. But
make sure those boundaries
are there. Make sure the boundaries
are set. And one thing I'm hearing is a pitfall that often happens is sometimes rules or boundaries are created just for that, for the LGBT youth.
Yes.
Where make them general.
It needs to be general.
Yeah. Boys and girls don't do this.
Yes.
So girls and girls don't get to hold hands and,
exactly.
And pair off or things like that.
Don't point it out as just them of, well, you can't do this though. But if like, Susie over here comes with their boyfriend, sure, they can sit close and cuddle and hold hands. No, it needs to be like a blanket rule for everybody.
Yeah, that's where a lot of unintended shame comes that, oh, you're different and broken, so we're going to treat you different and broken, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Oh, what about just this feeling, and sometimes maybe going back to this relationship, if a girl wants to bring her girlfriend to a youth activity, like sometimes there's this feeling of, well, if we let them do that, we're sort of indirectly condoning what they're doing. How do you draw that balance of loving but not condoning from your perspective?
Yeah. I had someone talk to me about something similar to that where they had like a youth in their ward that felt like people weren't accepting of her. So why like even bother coming? And I had given, because she had a girlfriend, and I had given this girl advice, like let her bring her girlfriend, you know? And she did. She came and she was just clear because they had like a Sunday lesson on the proclamation to the family. And that was really hard for that girl to hear because of what it talks about, of what a family looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And she just talked to her and she asked me like, what do I say to this girl? And I was like, you talk about it. Okay. Like we do believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. We do believe that. We do believe that through the gospel is where we're going to have the most happiness. But if that's the path you're not going to choose, then still be here, still like love each other. I don't think it's condoning what they do by being inclusive.
Yeah.
I think it's okay to have a real conversation beforehand of, you know, this could be awkward for some people or it could be awkward for you. I mean, it's probably gonna be really awkward for that girl if she wants to bring a girlfriend, knowing that this kind of conflicts with what she's being taught, but saying, but we love you and we want you here. I mean, if it was an adult woman married to another woman and they want to come to our sacrament meeting, we wouldn't stop them.
Yeah.
Right. And by them coming to our sacrament meeting, we're not saying, hey, good job. We support you, you know, way to get married, you know, whatever. we're saying like, yeah, I love you. either way. Mm-hmm. So if we wouldn't do that to an adult, why would we do that to these youth when they need us the most? Why would we say, no, like, you can't do that. You can't be here that way. You can't, you know, whatever. Like, it seems like a double standard to me. And if it's not, I don't know, like when people talk about like, well, if my son is gay and he's getting married and he wants me to come to my wedding, and I feel like if I go, I'm condoning what he's doing and it goes against what I believe. But, you know, if I don't, then I'm saying I don't love him. And we've been told many times by leaders and stuff that it's okay to love your son. It's your kid. It's okay to go. And you don't have to change what you believe and still support them in their journey and in their choices. That's the beauty of free agency, that we get to choose for ourselves and we don't get to take that away from somebody.
Yeah.
And we can choose to be a part of their journey and influence where we can. I mean, if we don't stay connected to these people when they leave, who's going to invite the spirit into their life?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think Bennett Borden,
his story is perfect for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Talks about that. And so I think it's really important that we don't exclude. And I think we kind of need to get away from that condone attitude. I feel like that's more church culture, not church doctrine.
Perfect. And you're not making a public statement by being inclusive of individuals and with diverse backgrounds.
We're not hanging rainbow flags and, you know, being like, hey, but we're saying, hey, if you're here, I love you.
Yeah.
Come. That's
and I think, I don't know if this is appropriate analogy, but it's like, you know, we can go to the parade, but that doesn't mean we have to march in the parade.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But nonetheless, we have to strike a balance there. I think people just sort of default to like, well, I'm going to be super clear on where I stand and just completely remove me and them from this situation so that people know that I'm not condoning. But I'd refer people to the Tom Christofferson interview I did with his bishop and stake president, that they didn't condone anything, but they were overwhelmingly like inviting and saying, there's always a pew available for you, your partner. Will you come to our 4th of July breakfast? And, you know, will you say the prayer at our 4th of July breakfast? Or, you know, those types of things that then later on opened the door for Tom to step through to say, you know, I think I'm ready to come back.
And I think it's going to be way easier if we take that approach with the youth than when we wait till they're adults to take that approach, when they've already maybe taken the harder roads and it's harder to come back from. If we can get that same attitude towards the youth at a young age of, I love you. Okay. You want to date a girl right now? You have your own free agency, but I still love you.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm still going to be here. I'm still going to check in on you. I'm still going to call you. Oh, the same thing. If a less active girl like stops coming to church, we don't like X them off our list and be like, oh, they stopped coming. We have a whole list of, you have to visit these people, get out there, reach out to them. So what makes it any different?
Awesome. Powerful point. Any other scenario, situation, or point that we haven't covered that, I guess that overall, what I'm learning from this is one, like, we have to realize that it's typically the adults and leaders that are making a bigger issue than it is. And we just maybe need to step back and say, let's all take a deep breath and we're fine. Right.
Yeah.
And then some of these things of, you know, if boundaries are necessary, make sure they're general boundaries for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, if you have an incident where you're at girls camp and let's say you don't even know that there's girls there that are gay and then you find two like making out or whatever, you know, then you address it and you say like, okay, you know, I get that this is a thing and we'll probably have to inform your bishops about it and stuff. But for the time being, we're going to put you guys in two different cabins. And we're going to ask that you don't sneak off and you don't, you know, whatever. I mean, it's the same thing at youth conference, like boys and girls sneak off and you don't, you could kick them out and send them home. But from what I've learned, because
that's the last resort.
Yeah, it's the last resort. I've had youth sneak off and make out at youth conference all the time and you find them and you're like, okay, well, I'm probably going to tell your bishop this happened, but you just separate them. You tell them like, I'm aware. I got my eye on you. Yeah. Like, don't go sneaking off. And you just be vigilant. It doesn't mean you have to watch them like a hawk, but maybe keep them in the corner of your eye. Don't make them feel awkward, but be aware. You now know it's a thing, but still find ways to keep them there and invite the spirit. And maybe that opens up a conversation of, okay, like you can sit them down even together and be like, what are you guys experiencing? Okay, so you realize you're attracted to each other and now you're figuring this out. How long has this been going on? Okay, do you still feel the spirit? Do you want to come to church? Is this confusing for you? It opens up a door instead of shaming them of, you got to get sent home. We got to talk to your parents. use it as an opportunity to figure out where they're at and where you could influence. Mm-hmm. I think we're so quick to, you know, nope, knock it off, stop. I mean, I'm a mom of three kids. I get it. I'm like, see them doing something wrong. And I'm like, no, you're grounded. You know, like you can't do that. But I have to remind myself all the time, like, let's stop and have a conversation about it. Let's dig into what they're feeling, why they thought it was okay, and why I think it's not okay. And then let's come to
and put a plan together.
Yeah.
Where do
we go
from here?
Let's figure out what's the next step.
Yeah. Awesome. So helpful. Anything else we're missing?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, that's great. Good. Again, they're sick of hearing me talk about this. What encouragement would you have for leaders to get to the North Star Conference and be part? What would that mean to you as a youth or as a member of the church to have their leader go?
I think that there is power in knowledge. We've learned that. I mean, we learn it in school. We learn it in church.
It is doctrine.
That yes. It is doctrine. And I think that if you are called to a position where you know, whether it's, you know, a bishop or a leader, where you know your mantle is now over this ward or these youth, and you are the person that's going to receive revelation for them, you're the person that's going to feel inspired of what to say and when to say, how are you going to help if you don't know? So I encourage all the leaders, whatever the subject is, I mean, study about pornography and the resources out there, because that's something youth totally come across. Study about LGBT and use those resources. Come to the conference. If you can't come to the conference, listen to the audios. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have audio for pretty much every breakout session and keynote speaker that is there, and listen to them, learn from it. Keep a pamphlet at hand. No, there's resources, there's websites, that
even church created. Yeah.
The church has MormonGay.org, which I think they're changing the name and all that now, but.
And it's in the gospel library app, there is under life challenges.
Yeah.
Challenges. There's some.
Yeah. It talks about it. And there are resources now. So use them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but I think I told one of my bishops, and he didn't know like anything about it, and I gave him resources and he never looked at it. And I was so bummed out, because someone else in my ward, her son, was going through stuff. And I was like, hey, you know, I gave the bishop some resources. Have you talked to the bishop? And she's like, I have, but he didn't give me any resources. I was like, dang.
Breaks like, your heart. Yeah.
Here's the resources. Yeah. So I think that there's power in knowledge. And if you really want to help people, then you have to try to understand. You have to do your research. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out. I mean, I think everybody, and sometimes leaders and even members of the church, we assume like, we pray like, okay, Heavenly Father, I'm about to go do this hard thing or have this hard conversation. Help me to know what to say. I mean, I've heard that a million times. I've said it to myself a million times, but he's not going to just like, I mean, he can, but I feel like he doesn't
always, give him something to work with.
Yeah. He's not just going to be like, you know, nothing about this subject, but I'm going to give you like a good chunk of 30 minutes worth of material to talk about. Instead, it's, hey, you've done your research and I'm going to help you recall it.
Yeah.
I'm going to help you remember, and then I'll throw my little things in there.
Awesome.
So
if somebody, especially in the Southern California area, do you do firesides? Would you come talk to a youth group? Would you come talk to an adult group, or are you there yet?
I would. Okay. I haven't been there yet. I have talked to youth individually when I think that it might be something they go through. Uh-huh. And I would just tell them my story and then leave it open if they want to share. I never go up and ask like, hey, are you gay?
Yeah.
Guess what? I am too. No, it's hey, I want to share something personal with you.
Yeah.
And I share it. And then I just say, I just felt like you needed to know.
Yeah.
And we all go through hard things.
And when you have a fireside like that, or if you have someone like Brittany come in and speak, I mean, your schedule fills up. Like, people think, okay, someone was vulnerable, I'm ready to be vulnerable.
Exactly. Right? I feel like the best part of coming out and telling people is when I'm vulnerable with them, and in return, they're vulnerable with me, and we have deeper, more meaningful connections.
Yeah.
And I think that's like the whole point.
Okay. Last question I have for you is, as you have gone through this journey, this experience with being gay and in the church, how has that made you a better disciple of Jesus Christ?
I think that it has made me realize that we're all here to learn Christ-like attributes, right? That's like the point. And I've learned to look at this trial not as like a negative, but as a positive. Being a disciple of Jesus Christ is like loving, right? Like loving and serving other people. And I feel that SSA members or people in general, whether they're a member of the church or not, we have that Christ-like attribute to love. We love deep. We love freely. We can give it so quickly. We can meet someone for 5 minutes and just be like, oh man, I love you. And I want to be best friends with you. And let's just, you know, do this thing. Let's be friends. Let's journey in this life. And we don't have to really develop that anymore. You know, I mean, it's good to love, but sure. we got it down. We know how to love. Our job is two things: to love within the Lord's bounds. So we have to learn to kind of dial it back and love the way Heavenly Father wants us to love. But also our job is to teach others how to love. When you come out and it goes bad and you have someone just tell you you're the lowest of low and kick you out of your house or whatever, your job is to love them, because that's how we're going to teach it best. You know, there's like a parable or something about the sun and the wind, and there's a man walking with his coat, and the, you know, wind's like, I can get this guy to blow his coat off, just watch. And the sun's like, I'll take that bet. And the wind blows and blows and blows, and the guy just holds onto his jacket tighter and tighter and tighter. But then the sun's turn, he just shines bright and it's warm, and the guy takes off his coat. So our job is to teach people how to love. And it's hard and it hurts, but that's what Christ did. That's how we become a disciple, because people were mean to him and people mocked him and crucified him, and he loved them. And he taught them how to love. He taught us how to love by his example. And so I feel like through this trial, the biggest thing I could say is I came out realizing it's a gift, and it's not one I'm always happy to have, but I can use it to make a difference. I can use it to build God's kingdom, and I can use it to continue to develop other Christ-like attributes. To the youth that feel this, they are amazing youth. They are strong and kind, and give them an opportunity to lead. Give them an opportunity to be a disciple. Show them how to use their love to influence others. Put them in leadership positions. Say, you have a gift. You can love so good. Now let's use it to build God's kingdom. Don't throw them out to the side. Teach them to be a disciple. Teach them to use their gifts and their talents. And that's what it is.
That concludes my interview with Brittany Ellis. A big thank you to her for being willing to participate. I left this interview feeling like so excited to get this out there to the masses and share it. It just happened a week ago. And so I feel so blessed to being able to have this conversation with Brittany Ellis. I'd be interested to hear what we missed. I'm happy to visit again with Brittany Ellis or another individual with North Star, and answer some of your questions. Maybe we can do a Facebook Live with a follow-up interview with Brittany Ellis and really dig into maybe some situations that you've faced as youth leaders in your ward, to really make sure we're prepared to help these beautiful young youth along, right? This is such a pivotal point in their life. We've got to be there. We've got to be ready to lead. And again, March 16th, if you are within traveling distance, if you can afford a plane ticket, if you can rent a bus and drive your whole ward council, please be there. It's in downtown Salt Lake City, and be at the North Star Conference at the free leadership sessions. Again, the link to register that is in the show notes, which you can access through any iTunes or podcasting app. They're there. Click on that, register, and be there. I'd love to meet you. If you've been before, that's not an excuse to not come again. You've got to refresh every year, because these individuals in your ward are worth it. So we'll see you there March 16th at the North Star Conference. And again, text the word LEAD to 474747, and you'll receive a link to our free PDF called 5 Steps in Getting Your Ward Ministering. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away. and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.